Welcome back on this Wednesday, the 17th day of August, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Gall, and obviously, since the intro is a bit different, you know that so is the beginning of the show today. We actually have some good news to report, along with the bad and the ugly, and in at least one of the cases, maybe the story fits into all three. But let's start at least with the unabashedly good news. Neocon gone, says the Zero Hedge headline. The evil hypocrite scumbag Liz Cheney has been not just voted out of Congress, but unceremoniously dumped in a huge landslide out of Congress, the Republican primary there. It's called a widely expected outcome, and the reason is the margin of victory was so great they didn't even bother to try to rig it. And in her case, you have to ask, why, after all, would the deep state even try? Trump-endorsed Republican challenger Harriet Hageman was so far ahead, with only about 13% of the votes counted, NBC News had to call it for her. By the time the dust cleared this morning, even the New York Times is having to admit that it was a landslide. Harriet Hageman got twice as many votes as every other challenger combined, and lying leftist Liz couldn't even pull 30%. Here's a bit more of the good news. The Bolsheviks' friend, Lion Liz, was one of the final remaining so-called Republicans who voted to impeach Trump, evidence be damned. Of the 10, only 2 now are left standing. Still, she practically dislocated her shoulder, patting herself on the back for her so-called integrity. Outside the polling location, she was quoted as saying, "We're facing a moment where our democracy really is under attack and under threat." And still, folks, she doesn't know what form of government we're actually supposed to have, which really puts the lie to her follow-up statement via a tweet. "I'm proud to cast my ballot today," she said, quote, "The challenges we are facing require serious leaders who will abide by their oath and uphold the Constitution no matter what." And her smashing defeat, as even the Daily Mail notes, comes as Democrats have switched political parties. They can do so in Wyoming even on the day of the election, if they have identification, in order to try to stem the tide against their Bolshevik comrade. Most of the stories note that President Trump took a victory lap saying congratulations to Harriet Hageman on her very decisive win in Wyoming, and he added, "This is a wonderful result for America and a complete rebuke of the unselect committee of political hacks and thugs. Liz Cheney," he continued, "should be ashamed of herself." No, folks, she has no shame. And now, he concluded, she can finally disappear into the depths of political oblivion, where I'm sure she'll be happier, much happier than she is now. Thank you, Wyoming. But honestly, folks, my favorite comment came from the Babylon Bee. Even the Daily Mail couldn't help but note that when her hypocrite daddy, Mr. Gravitas himself, came to campaign for her, he arguably didn't do her any favors, but the Babylon Bee put it this way, referring to a campaign ad this guy did for the traitorous daughter. Over a picture of the cowboy hat-wearing hypocrite, the caption reads, "Never has America faced a greater threat than Donald Trump, says the guy who started two wars and shot another dude in the face." So the woman who's literally come to represent the face of anti-First Amendment America, where you don't have a right to petition your government for a redress of grievance, because we may just put you in the gulag and throw away the key, is gone. Well, at least real soon now. Good riddance. The related bad news? Well, following her humiliating defeat, the unchastened Liz Cheney has threatened to do, quote, "whatever it takes." And if it wasn't for the fact that Donald Trump is so hated by the left, they'd call that a death threat. To stop Trump. Oh, and finally, as to more bad and even the downright ugly, on this one story alone, we turn to none other than the online front page of the New York Times, which has headlines, folks, like this. After losing in landslide, Cheney hints at presidential run. There's another one, analysis, yeah, sure, of what Liz Cheney's loss says about the state of the GOP. And, of course, you know, without having to read that bit of tripe, it's not good. But wait a minute, when it comes to the real ugly, here's some opinion pieces that are also on the front page from Frank Bruni. In the ways that count, Liz Cheney won. Good grief. And how about this one? Liz Cheney and the GOP old guard are down, but they might not be out. All right, from there, one more quick bit of news in the good category while we're talking about it. This comes from Steve Watson via Summit News. A senior White House so-called climate advisor, and that tells you volumes, has been sanctioned, who could have thought it, by the National Academy of Sciences, almost living up to their name, for violating their ethics policy. Axios reports that Jane Lubchenco, the Deputy Director for Climate and Environment at the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, has been pulled up by the NAS for editing a paper that was later found to contain not just technical errors, we're certainly used to that by now, but having worked with the scientists involved with it, one who turned out to be her brother-in-law. She was found to have violated NAS Code of Conduct Section 3, which says members shall avoid those detrimental research policies that are clear violations of the fundamental tenets of research, unquote. And by the way, kind of reflect badly on everybody who claims to worship the great god science. Oh, yeah, and there were a couple of GOP Congress critters who actually wrote an open letter back in February calling for the White House, and, yeah, you know what happened on this score, don't you, to consider whether Dr. Lubchenco's leading role in the administration's scientific integrity efforts, oh, good grief, undermines public confidence in future policy decisions. And on that score, I got only three words. Do you think? But at least that does lead directly to our bad story, and it's really bad. The senile mannequin has signed into what now passes, sadly, for law, and nobody is surprised at this, the laughably misnamed, literally calling evil good and good evil, Inflation Reduction Act that spends $750 million. Whoops! How's that for a Freudian slip, folks? I was harkening back to the days when the currency hadn't yet been completely debased. This'll put a wooden stake in it. No, that's $750 billion with a T now. To undermine public confidence in crappy science. And even the leftists are admitting this, certainly won't do anything to reduce inflation. The Biden-Fuhrer thanked the leftist turncoat, Joe Manchin, who initially killed the Build Back Better package not long ago, but evidently in response to a little bit of pork in his home state of West Virginia, a gas pipeline guarantee. Now the irony is, Manchin hadn't figured it out yet. There won't be any gas to run through that pipeline. He signed on to this bill that, let's be as honest as we can, folks, is intended to do nothing other than really screw the American people. And I know that might offend some. Hey, if you're offended at that, take a look at what this thing's actually going to do to you. Managing to read his scripted lines more or less as written, the Biden-Fuhrer hailed the new measure as a, get this, tool to take on the special interests. And that, of course, means American citizens who actually think there are parts of the Constitution that still apply. Wrong. Buried in the bowels of the anti-science pork-laden bill are, of course, 87,000 new IRS agents, and as Jefferson put it, appropriately, officers to be sent hither to harass our people and eat out their substance. No doubt referring to the crackdown that will follow the hyperinflation that this bill will help bring about, Chuckie Schumer, one of the most evil men in the history of the U.S. Senate, called this abomination, quote, the most important thing Congress has done in a long time, which is arguably true, if you understand Orwellian doublespeak. And that's why this, too, fits into both of those other categories, bad and ugly, really ugly. I'll follow that up with just a headline. We've talked about this before, but Martin Armstrong put it this way for the Burning Platform, and no doubt his own website as well. IRS agents, and you knew this, didn't you, are training to raid homes. Referring to the mock raids on suburban houses that the 87,000 new federal agents will use as they break down doors and threaten people at gunpoint, or arguably, folks, a whole lot worse, and describing the new National Criminal Investigation Training Academy for Big Brother's Federal Reserve Enforcement Agents, he noted how the new Special Agent Investigative Techniques, SAIT class, trains new recruits in tax law, evidence gathering, and interviewing, report writing, methods of proving unreported income, as if we actually needed proof, and money laundering violations. Oh, and it also, of course, includes use of force training, including firearms, weaponless tactics, and building entry. There's a message here, folks, and if you're paying attention, you got it before the Marionette-in-Chief even put his big red X next to this abomination's bottom line. This thing really is the Freedom Reduction Act, and it sounds like Congress knows it, because what they've done here is to say, hey, we know the hyperinflation is coming, we know there are a whole lot of really angry Americans, oh, and we know that's nothing compared to how angry they're gonna be once they realize what we've done to them, and we need to get our standing army armed up and trained up and ready for what we know is coming, because we've been pushing it for so long. And that truly is ugly. And finally, when it comes to the other really ugly store today, we knew this one too, but it's disgusting to have to report it again, because as the Pfizer so-called scientific trials and the data that they wanted hidden for 75 years continues to trickle out, we continue to find out just how satanically evil these lying scumbags worshiping the great god Satan, and I'm trying to put it as kindly as I can, but you know that can't hide the ugly, really are. Here's the headline, courtesy of American Greatness, and also the Burning Platform again. Report, it says, more than 40% of all of the pregnant women who were duped into participating in the so-called Pfizer-sponsored COVID vaccine trial of their mRNA poison suffered miscarriages. According to internal Pfizer documents recently released under that court order. Are you sitting down? Of the 50 pregnant women who were duped into, well, committing infanticide, it would seem, 22 of them, that's 44%, lost their babies, according to the documents. And despite this, the satanic hordes at Pfizer and, of course, the Biden regime continued to insist that those Zyklon B injections, in spite of the evidence that they knew damn well they had in their hands, were safe and effective. Yeah, because they want you and your kids dead. And this is really so far beyond just plain evil and ugly, it boggles the mind. Now, in case you've forgotten, in a January court ruling, U.S. District Judge Mark Pittman of the Northern District of Texas ordered the Federal Death Agency, or FDA, that was participating in the cover-up to release around 12,000 documents immediately, and then 55,000 pages a month until eventually, and not quite 75 years down the line, all of the documents, well, at least so we're told, will be released, totaling more than 300,000 pages. And what we've seen so far indicates it's not just criminal, folks. It was satanically criminal. Are you starting to understand why they want to make damn sure they've got all kinds of armed federal agents, FBI, IRS, ATF, and pretty much any other TLAs that you can imagine, to come bust down your door and take care of you once you figure out what's already been done to take care of you? And just to kind of tie the ribbons on this, a couple of more points from the piece. Trial documents that were released all the way back in April, and I've talked about them here, of course, reveal that the evil satanic companies involved here, and we're talking Pfizer in this case, had to hire 1,800 additional full-time employees in the first half of 2021 just to deal with, quote, the large increase of adverse reactions to its so-called COVID vaccine. And by February of 2021, the company was seeing so many so-called safety signals, especially including pregnant and breastfeeding mothers, that they had to hire another 600 employees immediately just to process that data. And among the numbers that they didn't want you to know, in the past, only 10 to 15% of known pregnancies ended with miscarriage, and now they've managed to, well, quadruple or at least triple that. Joseph Mengele would be proud. From there, I want to go back to a story that I did about 6 months ago. Early February this year, from a former leftist, and I think it's appropriate to say that at this point, Naomi Wolf, who clearly even then was awakening to what the authoritarian, outright totalitarian left was up to and was getting away with. Dr. Wolf, on her own Substack, wrote about what she called On the Subtlety of Monsters. My first post she wrote in this three-part series about how the evil that surrounds us has manifested was about the elite global technocrat class and their distance from the people whose lives they may crush. I noted, too, their lack of belief in or loyalty to the nation state. And add to this toxic myth, she said, is the certainty of this class of people that they know best about your life. Doesn't that just basically describe the totalitarian left and indeed all of those who know better than you what you need? Including whether you need to live or die. I made that case, she said in that essay, that surrounding us now was a metaphysical, seemingly, and I think she gets it right here, a satanic level of evil. And I'm seeking to explain in this series of essays how otherwise nice people, and indeed Western people who grew up with post-Enlightenment norms about human rights and the rule of law, can be doing evil now with whole hearts. I have a suspicion, folks, the one thing that she's missing here is an understanding of, well, what were once called self-evident truths, that there is a God, that He made us, and that our rights come from Him. But let's give her due. I'm asking, she says, how can they be suppressing the respiration of children intentionally? How can they be consigning friends and colleagues to eat in the street like outcasts, or sending cops to arrest a woman and terrify a 9-year-old child whose only crime was that they tried to visit the Museum of Natural History in New York without their papers? How could nice people in the humane West put on the agenda for the state of Washington just 2 weeks ago that those who are exposed to a contagious disease be placed in forcible quarantine without charge, without trial, and dependent on a court order and good behavior just to be allowed out? All of this, she writes, is happening now in America. She spelled it wrong. It needs a K, of course, but she seems to be coming to that understanding. The land of people who, since, she says, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, have had the principle of equality governing human relations as a matter of law. Well, at least that was the theory. A nation that's passed laws against the abuse of or corporal punishment of children in public cesspools in the 1970s in virtually every state, and people who've been raised in a culture of freedom and civility compared at least with lawless or outright totalitarian regimes that led them for the most part to be, on the scale of decency to cruelty, at least up until 2 years ago, very decent people. Yeah, how could good people be going along with this? Well, there are two lessons from history we'd better learn or relearn, and quickly. And yes, she says, even though some leaders and commentators, that includes her and it certainly includes your host, have passionately and publicly been comparing those years, 20 through 22 in America and Australia, to the early years of the Nazi regime, and though she says we face criticism for doing so, I won't be silenced about this because these similarities must urgently be addressed. People had better reread their Nazi history if they've ever read it at all, she says. They're getting it wrong when they demand, how dare you make the comparison? Because while the popular imagination of the Nazi era may be associated with death camps and people think of them when the word Nazi is invoked, the fact is that many years led up to that horror. Germany invaded Poland in 1939, and the extermination camps were established years into the Nazi drama, 1941. The more apt comparison has to do with the vivid similarities between our moment in the West since 2020 and the COVID era and the earlier years of Nazi Germany's civil society policies back in the early 1930s, when so many vicious norms and policies were set in place. But these were often culturally or professionally policed rather than being policed by camp patrols. And that's the point that better informed analysts of these similarities, says Naomi Wolf, are trying to make. Now, as your host has suggested, for at least a decade or so now, we're a bit further down the line than she has yet figured out, but hey, at least she's moving in the right direction and beginning to realize the things that have been long set in place are bearing their wicked fruit. Even the honest left seems to take a bit longer to wake up to where their policies inevitably and historically lead, but again, she's getting there. Writes Naomi Wolf, during those years, mass societal cruelty and a two-tiered society itself that perpetuated this cruelty was built up and policed, just like today, by polite civil society institutions tasked with snarling and baring their teeth. Casual escalating cruelty, a culture of degradation of the othered, and a two-tier society were built up in those years at the behest of Nazi socialist policy. But the construction of a world of evil out of what had been a modern civil society, even if a fragile one, was also endorsed and even policed by doctors, by medical associations, by journalists, by famous composers and filmmakers, by universities, by neighbors, teachers, and shopkeepers for years before the eventual death camp guards were tasked with their own far more heinous cruelty. Here she turns to Amos Elon's poignant history entitled The Pity of It All, A History of Jews in Germany, 1743 through 1933, which reveals just how many Jewish civil society leaders warned about the imperceptible shifts day by day in the direction of evil. In 1931, street violence was directed against Jewish storefronts and led to smashed-in windows. In other contexts, Jews were beaten upon leaving synagogues. Commentator Theodore Wolfe warned, this simply cannot continue. All decent people, irrespective of party, must form a common front. And so, says Naomi Wolfe, might one say today. But, she notes, decent people did not do so then, and Wolfe's call to action was of no avail. Elon calls these years the last spasms of freedom. And Wolfe's publisher told him to tone down his warnings in the interest of advertising and circulation, all the way back then. And just as today, those issuing alarms were suppressed and censored. And now, folks, it's being done at even a higher tech level, and arguably more ruthlessly. And just as today, emergency laws were the benchmarks that would allow society and the form of government, she gets it wrong, no, it's not democracy, but it was at least at one point supposed to be a republic, whatever it was, though, it collapsed. Hitler, writes Elon, wanted full powers like Mussolini's in Italy, and he knew exactly what was needed to turn a government into a legal dictatorship. emergency powers under Article 48. See if you notice any echoes here, says Naomi Wolf, because currently 47 U.S. states are operating under emergency measures which suspend or bypass normal legislative checks and balances, including, well, Tyranny Central, New York, the state from which she says she's writing. Under emergency measures, pretty much anything can and is being done. And the fact that most people still don't seem to understand that most of the country is living under those emergency measures is what's stunning about our current moment. That's why I keep saying these days that the coup d'etat has already taken place in America, and she's absolutely correct on that score. By definition, when you live under emergency measures, you no longer have a functioning democracy, or even, folks, a constitutional republic. Let me summarize, she says, where we are right now in America, as well as in the West, just in case you've gotten too used to it, too conditioned to see it clearly. She warned in the End of America, a letter of warning to a young patriot, that democracies, or even republics, do not usually die with a cinematic sense of goose-stepping brown shirts suddenly in the streets. They tend to die rather, just like Elon described, incrementally, day by day, collapsing grotesquely in some areas of society, and in regards to some institutions, even as other aspects of society and other institutions look and feel, well, at least superficially, just the same as they did before. And just because these settings may be familiar to us now doesn't mean that a 1931-like reality, if not yet a 1933-like reality, isn't upon us, or folks, for that matter, a 1939-type reality. In this country, she says, citizens are being forced to take their second or third or pretty soon fourth experimental gene therapy injection in order to be allowed to go back to school or keep their jobs as truckers crossing borders or as soldiers or sailors or military pilots or hospital workers. And millions of others have not escaped this coercive experiment, especially in parts of Europe. Minors are being forced to submit to the experimental gene therapy in order to keep playing high school basketball, baseball, or tennis, and thousands of adverse events are being recorded in VAERS, including deaths shortly after vaccination. But the forcing of injections continues, despite the fact that it's now obvious that they have no effect on transmission, and it's against all existing laws. The monsters, she says correctly, are walking among us, and we better begin to immediately and forcefully call them out. Now, let me reprise that again, folks. What's interesting to me, especially on a day like this, is how so many of the, well, at least once, far left has now awakened to the fact that, yeah, the Bill of Rights, even those parts of it that they respect and like, are being gang-raped right before our eyes. Naomi Wolf saw it at least 6 months, arguably more than that, in the past. And now, even those who have been oblivious to the evils of three-letter agencies like the FBI are starting to realize, wait a minute, they can get away with literally trying to politically execute a former president, arguably after the election was stolen from him and he failed to do anything about it then? Well, some of us realize that it's hardly the first time that the FBI has at least participated in the cover-up of the execution of a president. In my case, folks, your host will admit that it was Waco that helped awaken me. I got to know the primary investigator pretty well, Michael McNulty, who literally blew the lid off that particularly egregious execution of 6 dozen Sabbath-keeping men, women, and children in their own church in Texas. By that time, as an engineer, I'd already seen through the cover-up of the demolition of the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. No, McVeigh wasn't the lone bomber. And later I met and interviewed Randy Weaver, the survivor of the execution of his wife, Vicky, who was holding their infant child at Ruby Ridge, Idaho. Thank you, FBI, and sniper Lon Horiuchi again. Oh yeah, and I begin to notice then how the same names kept turning up over and over again, including during the Trump administration. Names like Bill Barr. So I'll say it again. Dr. Naomi Wolf is right, and we better realize it. These people are nothing short of monsters. So I'll close today with some observations, briefly at least, from Michael Snyder, who's noticed what your host has, too. Are they essentially erasing most of the Internet? Yes, this is alarming, he says. I hope you'll share this article, because it's pretty clear that so-called search engines like Gulag, but they're not alone, Bing and most of the others are equally guilty, are literally erasing, deep-sixing, so much information off the Internet that Big Brother and its Ministry of Truth don't want you to know. He goes through example after example, but the first one makes the case. Do a search, he suggests, for Donald Trump, and you'll see that they claim about 451 million results. You knew they were tailoring the ones, putting the ones they want you to see up front, but did you know that if you scroll down page after page after page, and hardly anyone ever does, eventually you get to the point where there's nothing new to see here. Move along, because, well, you know, you're not allowed to. Call it information devolution. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.